The addition of artificial intelligence was to basically find ways to streamline, automate, and reduce and minimize the dependency on the user for the technology to work in a very seamless way. The efficiency is really how it will make this a standard of care.
Welcome to Unlocking the AI Advantage podcast. We are here to fast track your success by leveraging the power of AI in business. Each episode brings you closer to the cutting edge of technology and entrepreneurship. Let's dive into the world of AI and make extraordinary strides in your journey. Are you ready? Let's go.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to one more episode of Unlocking the AI Advantage podcast. And this is your host, Ramesh Danta. Today, we'll talk about healthcare with the CEO and founder of an exciting company. And so interestingly, I met the CEO and founder through my association with the University of California at Irvine. So we will talk a little bit more about it. So just that's a teaser, how that chance occurrence came about. So without further ado and much delay, here let me introduce Ramin Mousavi. He's a CEO and co-founder of CathWorks. Ramin, welcome.
Hi, Ramesh. Good to be on your show.
So you and I, we met through the Dean's Advisory Board at University of California, Irvine.
Yes.
And along with that, you're also the Dean's Leadership, the chair as well, DLC chair as well. So, and then you actually went to UC Irvine. You did your undergrad there. You did your MBA. So you are married to UC Irvine, man.
First, thanks for having me on the podcast. And yeah, I have done a triple alum of UCI, as we put it. I did my undergrads there, and I went back and I did my MBA at Palomar School of Business. And as you mentioned, yes, I have the pleasure of, this is my last year serving as the chair of the Dean's Leadership Circle, which is the main organizations to bring people from the community to the school. And then as you and I both serve on the Dean Advisory Board, which is a group of top executives that are tied to school. So yes, I'm all in, you know, everything UCI, and I'm a proud anteater, and it has had a huge impact on my career. So my commitment to it is that hopefully if it has done that for me, it can do that for others as well.
I'm so looking forward to this recording. So now first, let's talk about CathWorks. Okay, why don't you introduce CathWorks, what it does, and what your role at CathWorks is?
Sure. So maybe I give a little background about why CathWorks exists. Cardiovascular disease-related death is the number one cause of mortality in both the U.S. and globally. In fact, according to the latest data from American Heart Association, roughly about 1 million people each year in the U.S. die as a result of this, 18 million people globally. When you look at the contributors to cardiovascular disease-related deaths, the largest bucket, almost half of it, about 48% of that, is tied to what's known as coronary artery disease. This is where the arteries that carry the blood in and out of your heart get a blockage for one reason or another, and as a result, the blood doesn't get through your heart or out of your heart. And when you look at that closely, there are different contributors to that, but the main ways of accurately determining when an intervention is needed for a patient is invasive. You have to put a wire, a catheter inside a heart to basically measure the level of blockage. It's known as fractional flow reserve. So basically, it looks to see, is the blockage big enough that you need to intervene? If there's more than 20% blocks, basically, you have to intervene. The concept behind CathWorks has been, can you do that same work non-invasively? So that's where the idea has come from. And actually, the origination of the idea has come from interventional cardiologist Dr. Ran Kornowski and Dr. Rifat Labi, who spent her PhD in the field. What we do at CathWorks is we take three routine angiograms, these are x-rays that they do of your heart, and use that and combine artificial intelligence and computational science. Computational science is a fancy word for a proprietary algorithm. So we combine AI and algorithm take those three images and we build a model of your entire heart, your entire coronary artery, and we detect whether you do have the blockage, you know, in the heart that requires intervention. And we augment that by providing additional tools to the physicians so they can do a more comprehensive job of determining the best treatment path. So take a problem that we know it exists, use what is available today from a technology innovation perspective, and then give the results to the physicians. It's a interesting and different approach for two reasons. One is obviously, as I mentioned, it's non-invasive, so you don't pose any additional risk to the patient. You provide more comprehensive solutions and view of the problem. It doesn't require any additional drug, you know, that you need to give to the patient, which the invasive solutions require that, and you can do it much faster. On the other hand, it is a transformation to how patients with coronary artery disease are diagnosed and treated, because at the end of the day, our solution is a software application. Even though we do have a piece of hardware that you need to have, it's a software application. So it's a change for how things are being treated, you know, transforming, moving away from this world of widgets that you have to insert into patients to do this non-invasively. And we've been at it for a while, and since 2013, and we've made great progress, but now the company is in stage that the product is regulatory-wise clear in the US, in Japan, in Europe, and we are actively commercializing it and making it hopefully standard of care very, very soon.
So that's a fantastic start. Like, so 2013 is when you started, and then 2024 we're talking about, and then by this time, so you've evolved, of course, as a business, and then technological evolution that happened, and lots of, you know, of course, the technology itself has been, you know, evolving last couple of years, and especially last, I would say, 3-4 years, but you've been at the forefront of this. Okay. I did some research, and then last year, 2023, you had the first patient that this was worked on and all the stuff. So the audience, for the sake. So now let's talk about this journey. How does this happen? So for 11 years, right? So you've been at it. So let me just start with the beginning. How did this idea come about to you on your team? Was it based on some intellectual property that your team developed, some research or some patent? How did this originate?
Yeah, and I will try to tie this to the title of your podcast, which is the Unlocking the Advantage of AI. The origination of the idea was that the two co-founders that I mentioned believed, because Dr. Kornowski actually dealt with the challenge of using the invasive solution. And this is not an easy thing to do. It is when you insert that wire inside, first of all, it's a finicky product at a lot of times. And there are actually 15 different steps involved from the beginning till you get a reading. And even that at times has some operator error. So the idea was, this is too important for this to be the only way to do it. There's got to be a better way of doing it. The other co-founder had the courage to think boldly of, if you go back in 2013, that was a different era of trying to use computer vision and image processing as a principle. So we are the first of its kind for what we do. At the time, the novelty exceeded everybody's comfort level, because you're trying to come up with an idea that is, you know, maybe a little too crazy for people to be comfortable doing. So we've had to go through that rigorous and rightfully, you know, imposed rigorous pathway, that what we had to demonstrate was that this approach is as good as the standard of care. So we had to embark on putting together a pivotal study that's called FAST-FFR. Back in 2016-17, that was actually led by Dr. Bill Fearon, who is one of the authority on this concept of physiology. And we compared the Cathros FFR angio system at its diagnostic accuracy compared to the gold standard invasive wire-based, basically, FFR. So that's kind of what we had to do.
That was 3 years, since the start.
Yes, it was basically about, 4 years, after it was done, study was concluded, which was the requirement to be able to receive NFT approval. But this is where I think it's probably relevant to the typical audience that you have, because this entrepreneurship and trying to figure out how you bring in AI doesn't always present itself in a very easy or happy way. We received FDA approval and we did a limited launch, limited market launch. And what we learned was that as fascinating as the novelty of the technology was, the manual work that was involved, and just to simplify the process for your listeners, this requires you to acquire these x-rays in real time inside the cath lab. And then you have to select the right images and you have to basically use that to build the 3D model, and then you apply the algorithm. That first part was very manual. So what we learned was that the product was not ready for prime time. We had to do more work to be able to get this ready for prime time. So between 2018 and 2021, a lot of work was done to develop the fourth generation of the product, which is what's in the market today. And that's where we added artificial intelligence. So the addition of artificial intelligence was to basically find ways to streamline, automate, and reduce and minimize the dependency on the user for the technology to work in a very seamless way. Because in addition to all the clinical and actually economic benefits that we highlighted, the efficiency is really how it will make this a standard of care. So we did that in 21. We brought the fourth generation to market and we knew that it's ready to go. So actually, there were cases done just going back all the way to 2017 on the clinical study, and then commercial cases starting 2019. The first case that you're referring to in 23 is we are now moving past demonstrating the accuracy, and we have embarked on doing a landmark study called All Rise. This study is to now demonstrate that the outcomes of decision making using our technology is also as good as the gold standard. So the first patient in that study was enrolled last year in June, and we are continuing to actively enroll. It's a very large 2,000 patient study, a randomized controlled trial that we are hoping to demonstrate the benefits that we do. So a long journey, but as we talk about AI, as you know, it's a buzzword and we hear it a lot of times. And sometimes, honestly, I don't know what people mean when they say, AI, but this is one of those very pragmatic, practical applications of artificial intelligence. We have neural networks with deep learning capabilities built into the machine that allows us to basically do something that would take a lot longer. Actually, it would take about 15 minutes to do it manually in less than a couple of minutes, using that addition.
So got it. I mean, I think this story is fascinating from many different angles, right? So everybody is now talking about generative AI. Hey, we can generate content videos. No, we're talking about AI that saves lives here, okay? So we are not talking about that one. So that the AI application of AI to save lives, that's one fascinating. The other thing that really fascinates me is your story about, so far we've been talking to startups, the early stage, right? So they've taken it to a certain stage. But your story, CathWorks' story, is that 2013 it started, but there were different factors. You mentioned like the 2014 that you had to prove that you have to improve the efficiency. And during the 2019-20, I would like you to tell us, but somehow you partnered with Medtronic. It's one of the largest healthcare companies out there that it looks like a scaled CathWorks to a different level. So can you explain to us, what is that milestone event that happened and how did that partnership come about with Medtronic? People out there, it's a dream thing, right? So they want to be able to do something like that.
Yeah, so first, as I'm sure my partners and friends at Medtronic would want me to clarify, it is the world's largest medical device company. But we were lucky at CathWorks that early on, we had some visionary physicians who are also investors, that were involved in early days of companies, folks like Dr. Peter Fitzgerald from Stanford, who has always been ahead of his game, seeing the potential of this innovation in our space. So that enabled CathWorks to be able to add a very exceptional combination of strategic investors and institutional investors at every round that we raise money. So we were able to basically have companies like Medtronic at each round invest in CathWorks, which is a big value for entrepreneurs who are in earlier stage of a company thinking about, because this is more than just getting the money, but there's a strategic basically view of this a space that comes in. So we benefited from that throughout the journey. In 2021, when it became very clear to us that we finally had the product ready for prime time, then the next logical question was, okay, if the vision and the mission at CathWorks is to partner with physicians to transform how patients with CAT are diagnosed and treated, that's a pretty bold mission. The very, very first step then becomes, if the technology is ready, how do you bring this to market? So we had a choice to make. We could go the route of raising a large sum of money to build a channel in the US and, you know, maybe even globally to bring this to physicians. That's a big task because you have to find the right people who already know the space and have the relationships. And then it costs a lot of money and it takes a long time to put it together. Or alternatively, find the right partners to be able to do this with. We were very blessed that the interest was really high for CathWorks. And at the end of the day, when we looked at the interest in the company and all the different possibilities that were in front of us, the CathWorks boards and ultimately the shareholders believed that Medtronic was a right partner because they already had that established, credible, well-respected channel already globally, something that it would have taken us, even if you gave us unlimited resources, would take us years to build. And on the other hand, because within the portfolio of Medtronic, and Medtronic has different operating units, and this falls under the coronary renal denervation business of Medtronic, this was a great complementary product to the portfolio because they already have the treatment products. This would help also have a diagnostic product. So we entered into what we refer to publicly as this strategic partnership. It got announced that we are in an acquisition option agreement with Medtronic, where two things are happening at the same time. First, we have entered into this agreement that upon completion of some undisclosed, milestones, CathWorks will be acquired by Medtronic, or put it better, Medtronic has an option to acquire CathWorks, and CathWorks has a option to compel Medtronic to acquire CathWorks. So two-way agreement that will happen. In parallel to that, Medtronic agreed to make a significant investment in CathWorks, so as it's disclosed publicly, $75 million investment, so we can continue to innovate and generate clinical evidence, still like a startup, like a really well-funded startup. And then last but not least, together we co-promote the product in the US and Japan and now Europe. So it kind of hits all of those marks that you could imagine. If you put the lens of a startup CEO on, a majority of our times are consumed with how can I raise the next dollar and what does an exit look like for, the investors of the startup. What I just described to you check both of those boxes, so I don't have to worry about that, which enables our team, and we have an unbelievably talented team, to focus on that commercialization, partnering with Medtronic, focus on innovation. We continue to improve this product continuously each and every day and generate the kind of evidence that like the ORISA study is, but we get to do this latter parts still like a startup. So you get the best of both worlds, where you do want the big infrastructure, we are partnering, and where you want to run fast, we are still behaving like a startup.
The question that comes to my mind, and that you may or may not be able to talk about it. So because whenever a startup founder, a startup has to make those kinds of decisions, so the other aspect of it is there exclusivity involved, in the sense that because some startups may not want to go that route because, hey, that limits their channel to you know, whichever company is partnering with, whereas they may, here in this case, the best of both worlds is that Medtronic is the largest company out there, right? So it's like it's a less risk involved. But is it exclusive agreement that you have with Medtronic, or CathWorks has Medtronic, or is it that you still have option of going to other device manufacturers if they want to do it?
Maybe I answer this way because, you know, I'll stick to what we publicly have disclosed about the deal, but it's a co-promotion. It's not a distribution agreement. So we're working together to co-promote. So it's not that they are the only channel that we sell the product. True. In reality, if you really think about what the end goal it wants to be, if we want this to be standard of care, in all practical way, the possibility is only there if it is in a portfolio of a company like Medtronic. I actually give you some insight on the cardiovascular side of medical device. And I know this sometimes makes my good friends in sell channels, and I have lots of them, upset when I say this, but the world just doesn't need another independent group of sales team going to the same cath lab. You know, if you walk into a cath lab, there's already enough sales reps competing with each other for, you know, mind share of the physicians. That physicians and the hospital staff have a lot going on. They much prefer not have to meet one more person and deal with that. So I think about it is slightly different, whereas even if there are different ways to get out there, is optimization of this path, because ultimately we know what the end result of this agreement can be, is what we have focused on. You know, so we basically have said, this opportunity that we don't take for granted has presented itself, that we can grow this business commercially. And we've been very successful in the last few years. And it has happened as a result of the structure of the agreement. This is can only get even better if we augment it, so that end product that becomes a part of the portfolio is even better than it was on the day that we announced this deal in July of 2022. And if you really think about it, is you can excel innovation with that startup mindset, that, you know, you're willing to take more risk and push the boundaries, and you build something that can be ready for full scale up commercialization. So one of the things that we're doing is that we're building a lot of infrastructures that can support that level of scalability. I can tell you from firsthand experience, having sat on the other side of this equation in strategics, as you know, I spent a good amount of my career at large companies in medical device, even like Edwards and Baxter. And one of the challenges that you often face during an M&A of a smaller startup is that during that integration, things falls apart. You lose key talent. And ultimately, where you end up is a less than perfect setting where the full promise of the technology never gets fulfilled. We have an opportunity to do this one different. This is a first of its kind structured that way. It required a lot of finessing and willingness on both parties to be able to do that. But we were lucky that we did have a partner on the other side that has similar vision to go doing that. So I think we have put all our focus, and we've been very methodical. Started with the US, added Japan. We just started doing European commercialization at the end of last year. And I think these will build on top of each other to build a very happy, healthy, and thriving franchise that can grow for many years to come.
Very fascinating, Raymond. So I think that thank you for walking us through the decisions that you guys were making, and from both sides of the angle. And that now I'll start transitioning into Ramin, the personality, as an individual. So the first question I would like to start that still kind of touches CathWorks is, so you are not a medical professional, right? You're an electrical engineer, right? So afterwards you got an MBA, and then so you are able to explain the medical terminology. You talk, you know, as if you are a medical professional. Of course, 11 years probably does that to you anyway, right? So you've been spending this much of time, and a year prior also you've been spending in this. So how did the founding team come about? How did you meet your founders? Where was it? And then how was the meeting of minds happen? How did the meeting of minds happen in 2013 or even before that?
Yeah, so first, to not offend any of the engineers out there, including all the good engineers on my team. At some point in life, I was a computer engineer, and electrical engineer has been too long for me to be able to claim that I am. I do hold the degree, but you know, there are people far more qualified than me to do that. You know, if you give me a circuit board or a piece of code, it will take me a while, but I will eventually figure it out. And I, as you mentioned, I started actually my career in high tech and aerospace before switching to medical device. Getting my MBA at UCI, Palmer High School of Business, is actually the vehicle that basically did the trigger for me to switch industry from one end to another. And I actually at the time joined Edwards Life Sciences, which is at the time was one of the fastest growing companies in med tech. So that transition is where I got forced to kind of work on building that clinical acumen. Now, obviously, I'm not a medical doctor and do not have that capability and probably was not ever smart enough to, you know, be able to pull it off anyway. And I think the privilege and responsibility sits there. But at a further distance, those of us who are in medical device have a small role to play to help physicians, you know, be able to treat patients well. So my transition at the time gave me the opportunity to be at the forefront of the commercialization of these transformative kind of technologies. You know, so I've been lucky that I've now got to experience this multiple times in my career, obviously in a large company settings before. And that was a trigger, you know, the relationship that I was able to build with key opinion leaders. It became the point of introduction to what is the CapWorks organization today. And I will just put a lens on it because as I think about this, and in fact, this week I was there's a very now prominent, you know, continue to grow medtech meeting that happens here in Orange County in California called LSI. And whenever you go, you have an opportunity to listen to founders doing a pitch. In my mind, if you are at different parts of a startup life, you need different skill sets, you know, and not all of us have all of them. There is that intuition and intuitiveness of how you come up with an innovative solution to a problem and how do you bring that to a place that's ready for a market, basically go to market. And then there's the commercialization. So I think the having enough technical background to be dangerous and understanding the innovation and then having the track record of being able to commercialize a transformative technology like this was the trigger, the introduction to, you know, those who were involved, including the investors of CapWorks. But I really would say if we write the book on our journey, and I really mean that, is that we are lucky because we got surrounded by a team that has been passionate about helping patients, and they all bring into this that passion with different level of expertise of having done similar things, bringing transformative, innovative healthcare technologies to the market. So that, I think, is the key to success that we've had. We have a team all the way from the executive team to even, you know, young graduates that we hire. They have that profile in it. So in essence, if I were to tell you the profile of CapWorks is more than the founders or, you know, one or two executive, but it's just the core of this team that is very passionate about this topic of just helping patients.
So that gets me to the next question, which is, so you were with Edwards and you were with Baxter, so career focused, you know, the check keeps coming at the end of the month, and so the food is on the table, and then suddenly one fine day and you have to tell your family, nope, I don't want to do all that stuff, I'm going to do a startup. How did that happen?
If you were to map, if you were to graph our careers, there are these inflection points that we have where we've made crazy decisions that either have paid off really well or not in our career. I think for me, it was fairly organic. It was not abrupt because I was very privileged to have participated in these amazing product launches, leading, you know, some really, really great initiatives. But if you do that, when you get to a point where you feel like you need to do another one of those, it's not always easy to find another one within the large company setting. And what I mean by that is that it's not like every product that a large company launches has got to be like that. So that excitement at not being there becomes a challenge. So that was number one. Number two, I have always been a believer that if you wake up and right as you open your eyes, that full excitement is not there. It's time for a change. And so the combination of those things were the trigger for just thinking about what does the next thing look like. The advice that I said, and I would share this with people, that is great to get to have, be surrounded by people who are smarter than you and have more experience to tell you what not to do. The advice that I received at the time from a handful of key opinion leaders and executives that I have high respect was, look, it gets harder and harder to do something entrepreneur-like the further you go and you're creating large companies because of what you just said, the stability that it brings in. And let me just say another maybe unpopular thing. In a large company, the decision-making is most of the time very de-risked. It almost has nothing to do with your titles. You know, all the critical decisions are only made by a very small number of people. Everybody else does execution. It's one of the downside, and a lot of large companies are trying to change that, putting decision-making in the hands of people who are doing the work, but that's not the norm. But doing something entrepreneur requires a lot of energy. So the longer you wait, the harder it gets. In fact, I would already say the best time to do something is if you have just enough experience in a large company to understand the space you're in, but you're not so well established that the taking the risk doesn't work, because a lot of times startups don't turn out, you know. And I just told you the story of CapWorks. As excited as we are today, if you and I had this conversation in 2019, you would have a very different takeaway, because that's just the life of a startup. So I took the risk. It didn't work out the first time, obviously, because we came very close to not being there because the product wasn't ready to commercialize, which does speak to, if I would pick one attribute that is the absolute necessity of doing this kind of work, is perseverance. You got to believe in what you do. And that doesn't mean that it will always work out. It doesn't. But you got to have that perseverance that you believe in what you're working on and stay with it to see if you can get it past the finish line. So that was a trigger, a big move. To be 100% honest with you, when I graduated from my undergrad and getting my MBA, I did not think I would ever do a startup. In fact, I could have mapped my career from the beginning to the end 37 different ways, and 38 way of it would have ended up at the same place that I was. But now looking back, I realized that there's this interesting saying that says people who go to do entrepreneurship choose to do something more difficult than others do, so then they live the rest of their life different than everybody else. That's so true. Like, that's basically the essence of it comes in. So that was it for me. That was a trigger. This also goes to tell you that you got to be open-minded and flexible. You know, the career takes different turns. You got to be flexible and take on challenges as they come.
Yeah. I mean, actually, there are a few things that you mentioned which resonate with me 100% personally. It's a similar story where the dissatisfaction of working in a large company, at some point there's a saturation, so things are out of your control, and so that becomes a trigger. But many people just continue to, you know, stay there, because I remember one conversation I had with a colleague, when I was working in a company. He said, hey, if I leave, I may not get another job. And I said, I don't want to be in that position, because, you know, you're a smart person. If you think, if you leave, you cannot get a job, it's a death sentence. You know, it's like I don't want to get to the stage, right? You want to leave before you get to the stage. And then afterwards, it's the resilience and the perseverance. You know, those are the must-haves. And Ramin, let me ask you this question. You know, it's easy to say that resilience and perseverance are needed, right? It's extremely difficult to practice it, because having gone through at this stage, you're saying in 2016 or 17, if I had come to you and said, Ramin, you should have resilience, you would have kicked me because you just found out that your product may not be that efficient. You need to go spend another 2-3 more years to do it. But how do you go through that phase? Because it's not just you, there are other people who depend on you, who rely on you, family members or whatever that is, expectations that of yourself. So, but how does one go through that phase of, you know, being resilient? Like, there has to be some foundation. How did you find?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think it makes you appreciate experience and pedigree. You know, the gray hairs that I have is a result of those years, you know. And honestly, it makes you appreciate people who have experience when they share with you their experience. That look, it's priceless because they're giving you life lessons that you can avoid learning it on your own. I think, and what you said is so true. The hardest thing about these roles is that the burden of responsibility you feel for the people you convince to also take on the same journey. Because one thing for you, you know, to fail individually is another thing when you impact others and their families, you know, and your own family. I think about it in two different ways. First, from a career perspective, we are all responsible for our careers, and accepting something that we don't like is a choice we are making. And the one thing that at times I find, you know, difficult to process is that when people complain about the setting they're in, but they don't do anything about it. You know, it's like, oh, I am here, and they put this person, they give that job to that person, you know, but I've been here, I'm more qualified. I said, well, what are you doing about it? You know, just complaining is not the way to, you know, get yourself where you want to go. And if you want to bet, you should bet on yourself. I mean, even if you're going to fail, that's a good bet. You know, I would always bet on myself before I bet on someone else. The other part of that is knowing that the process is not linear. Like, it is going to have ups and downs. And you putting boundaries for where you are. And here, I think from a career perspective, having a well-balanced life becomes important. You need to have a support system around you of your family and your friends that can hold you in those difficult decisions. I can tell you that, like, one of the greatest thing in my life has been when I decided to walk away from, you know, more than a decade of being in one place. Most people's reaction would have been, you had this great career, you know, why are you, you know, basically walking away? That's one way of thinking about it. Another way of thinking about it is that if you have the right support system around it, it's like, listen, you've got to go work. If this doesn't work, there's nothing that says you can do that again, either there or somewhere else. So that's what I would tell people. I have made it a mission of mine that as I talk to people who are going through their career, when we have this conversation, to say two things. One, since I never loved advice, I don't give advice. But what I have done for my own career is that I've had this simple rule that says, if when I wake up, the same passion was not there the day before, is a trigger for me to do something different. If you live your life with that, I think you will have the right kind of drivers around it. It's not easy. You're absolutely right, Ramesh. And as you know, when you work really hard to build a career, the human nature is that you think about risks more than other things. And it gets harder because the pyramid becomes that your options become more limited, you know, so more downside than upside. But I do think that if you have that drive to want to have an impact, this is the best thing about what we do. Even when we fail, you feel the impact of it. It's like going through a wall. You know, we run with full speed to a wall. I take that over being stagnated, you know, somewhere just to show up each day and be a cogs in the bigger machine.
Excellent. I mean, so this is very fascinating and very practical, right? So it's not, you know, very high sounding words. So you're actually walking us through the process of how you navigated to this stage. As we said, 11 years since you started, it's a long journey. And then, but you've gone through it, and then you are at a, you know, best of both worlds kind of a stage. So anything that you want to talk about, what's ahead for CathWorks and what's ahead for Ramin Vousawi?
You know, so I will say that, you know, we are a reflection of the CathWorks team. Okay. So I'm just one contributor with defined job responsibilities, but where CathWorks is today is a reflection of the collective group that we have here. And we are, I personally am so blessed to, you know, get to work with the talented team that we have in different functions. For us, what's ahead is continuing the journey that we have today to make this amazing platform the standard of care, achieving that mission of transforming how patients are diagnosed and treated. And we are working really hard towards that. For me personally, is to extract every ounce of experience professionally and personally out of this journey, because I do not take it for granted that we are in a very unique position as a company. So my job is to see how can we make sure that this journey is also as fun as that destination. So that's what I want to do, and I want to continue to do that. And then being able to stay involved and engage in the non-work related things that I do care about. You and I have UCI in common. That is a very common cause to both of us. And it's because talking about this inflection point, it impacted my life that will impact basically my kids and hopefully theirs for years to come. So can we do everything that we can? So maybe that experience can be repeated for some others. You know, I think at the end of the day, we live in a world where if going back to the core of humanity and being kind to each other and find ways to have an impact on each other's lives in a positive way will define our individual story and legacy beyond anything that we do, you know, professionally. I think that's who we will be known at the end of the day. So for me, that's what's, you know, whatever I can do to apply this is the goal. And hopefully we'll do a semi-decent job, in that journey.
No, no, fantastic job you have done. It's also collected how you outside of the work, how that helps you personally fulfill, your own personal core. So I think that's also very important. So, thank you very much for your time. It's extremely fascinating. Wish you the very best. Wish CathWorks the best. Fighting on all cylinders.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on, and kudos to you for the conversations that you're having. Having listened to your conversations with different entrepreneurs, always fascinating to learn about individuals and stories, and I wish you the best of luck in the continuation of that.
Thank you. I learned a lot. I mean, it's a blessing, I think, to be able to talk to people like you and other people, and the stories that they share is just, it helps me become a better person. Like, as you said, wants me to get up next morning and then, do this again.
Good. Thanks so much. And thank you for having me on.
Thanks, Arif.
And that's a wrap on another insightful episode. But remember, the power lies in applying what you've learned. If you found value in our conversation today, please share it with others who could benefit, subscribe for more, and consider leaving us a review. Visit theaientrepreneurs.com. For more resources, including golden gems of articles, ChatGPT prompts, AI tools, tutorials, gifts, and much more. Let's keep pushing the boundaries of what's possible. Until next time.